Hi everyone. Let me start by saying Ben and I worked together as part of a Institute and Faculty of Actuaries research group. So we were all actuaries or actuaries in the making, and the research that we conducted was commissioned by the profession to look at how pensions specifically could fund long-term care. And our remit was really to look at the regime in England. So we've got slightly different regimes in Scotland and Wales, and we were also told to focus on how pensions could fund long-term care. So there are obviously other assets that could be used. So we're going to look to give you a bit of background to how pensions work in the United Kingdom, how social care operates in England. And part of our paper was actually to look at what products could be used to help meet consumer needs in England. We've got a new social care regime coming into effect in England in the next year. So we did some analysis of looking at what impact that would have on people's needs. And then we've got some findings and conclusions we wanted to share with you. So, in a nutshell, social care in for over 65s in England is funded and operated by local authorities. So each local authority has got its own budget to manage, and it determines how much it wants to spend on social care, and it runs its own set of rules. That's the current situation in England at the moment. State support is means tested. So if you've got assets below £23,000, you can start getting state support, and it only really kicks in once you've got assets below £17,000. That's going to change under the new regime. Your means testing limits are going to increase. The current issues with the current regime are that the provision varies dramatically by region. Like I said, each local authority can set its own rules. There is guidance and follow, but there's quite a lot of discretion. So one particular area is eligibility. Each local authority can set its own eligibility criteria, and you might live in one area and be able to get local authority support for your care needs, but if you move across the border to another county, you wouldn't qualify just because they've got different thresholds for long-term care. That's going to change in the new social care regime. They're introducing a national eligibility criteria. There's a big misunderstanding of how social care works in the UK. We're fortunate enough to have a national health service, but quite a lot of people in the UK actually see social care as an extension of that. So quite a lot of people think that social care is free when it's needed, and that's a misunderstanding that's gradually being addressed, particularly because we've got a new social care regime coming into effect. So there's a lot of media attention on what is the social care system, who has to pay for it. A lot of people talking about a cap, and we'll explain all that in a second. Currently, like I said, means testing only really comes into effect once your assets drop below £23,000. So you can be quite wealthy, go into care, and then luckily or unluckily, you live for a long time in care, and you run down all your assets and fall back on the state. There are stories of people spending hundreds of thousands of pounds in care. That's an issue of the current care system, and again, that's being addressed with the new social care regime. Given that we're talking about how pensions can be used to fund long-term care, I thought I'd give you a little bit of background about how they work in the UK. So currently, there's a requirement to annuitise, an effective requirement to annuitise, or go into drawdown by age 75. That's being removed by April next year. The government announced in the budget this year that they were going to introduce a flexible pensions regime, which basically means that people can take out all their pension savings and spend it on whatever they like, really, subject to the marginal rate of tax. Currently, we have life expectancy-based restrictions on what you can take out of your pension. So if you went into annuity, the price you paid for that was roughly based on your life expectancy. you went into drawdown, there were limits on how much you could take out of your drawdown based pension. Those life expectancy restrictions are disappearing from April next year. To encourage people to save into the pensions, there's tax relief, so any money you pay into a pension, subject to certain lifetime limits, there's gross of income tax, so a strong incentive there. And when you want to take your money out, you can take it through a quarter of your accumulated fund free of tax. So quite strong tax incentives to save for your retirement. As you'll all be aware, we've got an ageing population, and the demographic that needs long-term care is growing at a rapid rate. We're saying the age 85 plus group is going to more than double in the next 20 years. Clearly, that's going to put a huge strain on state finances that are having to fund long-term care. So the new social care regime. Basically, it all started in July 2011 with the Dilnot Commission, and Dilnot published a set of recommendations in July 2011 around what the new social care regime should look like. So one of the key elements of that was a social care cap, which I think in his report it was around the £30,000 mark. It's currently being set at £72,000. Basically, how that worked is, as soon as someone has eligible care needs, they start running a meter, and once they hit £72,000, then the local authorities will start paying some of the care costs. Now, up until recently, there's been a lot of confusion about how does it actually work. A lot of people thought £72,000 was the absolute maximum they'd pay, and with the new regime, costs that the local authority won't meet are hotel costs. Because what they didn't want to do was to create an incentive for people to want to move out of home care into residential care. So if you're living at home, you're having to meet the residential costs. So if you move into residential care, you have to meet those same equivalent costs. So under the new regime, people have to pay around £12,000 per annum out of their own pocket. There's another issue currently in the UK, particularly in England, where the local authority cost of care is lower than the actual privately funded cost of care. So there's a cross-subsidy happening at the moment where local authority-funded individuals are being subsidised by privately funded individuals, which is probably a bit of an issue when everyone decides they want the local authority to facilitate their care, which is one of the options in the new regime. But what it can mean is that people in the new regime will have top-up costs. So they'll go into care, you're privately funding it, you might be paying £600 per week, and then they hit the cap, which means the local authorities stop paying contributions to meet those costs. But if they, unless the care homes agree to drop the care fees that they're paying, they have a gap between what the local authority needs to do cost of care and what they're actually paying. So there's these so-called top-up costs. So there are three types of costs: local authority set costs, top-up costs, and hotel costs. The cap only applies to local authority set costs. So individuals will still, even with this cap, they'll still have significant cost to pay after reaching it. And Ben will explain that in a bit more detail in a moment. As I mentioned, the means test limits are changing. So they're increasing the means test limit from £23,000 up to £118,000 if you live in a property or if your property is considered. And if your property is not included in the assessment, it's £27,000. So a lot more people will qualify for state support through the means test. And one area that people often get confused is they think the means test works with the cap, but actually they're two separate systems. So if you qualify for state support through the means test, that kicks in before the cap. So that's clearly a big improvement in the level of state support that people will get. There are other changes that come into effect. So, like I mentioned, there's the national minimum eligibility criteria. So there's a standard across the whole of England, which make it easier for people to move areas, which is quite common in the UK. Another change is they're actually introducing they call it a universal deferred payment scheme. The universal being that every person, if you qualify, will be entitled to it, irrespective of where you live. currently certain local authorities will provide a loan facility, which is what it is. So the Fair Bank Scheme is a loan facility to borrow against your property, like your care. So the Fair Bank Scheme will basically mean that people don't have to sell their property until they die, which in England is culturally quite difficult. A lot of people don't think they have to sell their home pay for care. As I mentioned, there's some budget changes coming into effect, which is great for product innovation, because when we were doing our research, a lot of it was before the budget came into effect, the budget announcement came into effect. We were saying we needed more flexible pensions regime, so that product providers can design pension products that can meet a whole range of income profiles. And clearly, there's a wide range of what people will need in retirement. Some people will need care earlier, later, different lifestyles, and so flexible product design is needed, and the new pensions regime will help with that. The main concern that we had with the budget announcement was around whether or not people would spend their money too quickly and run out of funds before they need long-term care, if that's what happens. Clearly, the two main risks that you have to face when you're managing a pension fund is investment risk and longevity risk. And insurance companies struggle to do that with a lot of the professionals that they employ to manage those risks. Asking individuals to understand and manage their life expectancy and investment risk effectively sounds like a tall order, but it's certainly one that the industry is trying to help solve. So why do we think pensions are a good solution? Well, it's an established framework in the UK. People understand it a lot better than they would if we were to introduce a completely new regime. Whether or not they understand it as well as we'd like, well, that's another question. So if we were to introduce any new products or a new regime for private funds and social care, using pensions, the existing pensions framework would certainly help make that a speedy introduction. With the new budget announcement and the flexible pensions regime, clearly flexibility is a big plus for the developing products. We've got a system called auto-enrolment in the UK, so everyone that's employed gets automatically enrolled into a pension scheme unless they choose not to opt out. So that should lead to a much greater level of pension savings. One of the issues we have is the average level of pension savings in the UK is around £30,000. And when you look at the typical costs, I think the same for England, the average cost of someone will face by the time they hit the cap would be around £140,000. So there's a big gap between what they've got in their pension on average and what they're going to face if they need long-term care. Also, in the UK, like I said, employers are heavily engaged in pension saving, and individuals tend to trust their employers a lot more than they trust financial services providers. So potentially, there could be a regime that encourages employers to provide some sort of long-term care saving facility. So in terms of some of the products that we considered, these are the ones that we highlighted in our report. And I should say everything in this presentation is discussed in a lot more detail in the report that we showed a link to at the end of the presentation. Protection insurance is very much like what's in the US at the moment. So it's pre-funded, individuals are being paid a single premium or regular premium, and in return, if they needed long-term care, the protection product would pay out a benefit, and that benefit could be a fixed amount for a fixed period. Particularly for this new regime, we're sort of saying that on average people take about 5 years to hit the cap, so you could set it up so that if they meet the national minimum eligibility criteria, the protection insurance pays out. It pays out for 5 years. Income drawdown, it's basically an invested type product. You can invest in any type of managed funds, unit funds. Very flexible. Currently, there are income restrictions on how much money you can take out unless you have a guaranteed income of about £12,000 per annum. We came up with this new idea, well, maybe not so some people, but in the context of pensions, it was certainly new. And that was a ring-fenced pension pot specifically for long-term care. which had associated tax incentives around inheritance tax. Perhaps that would need to be revised with the new pensions regime, but there's still an argument about could we create some more tax incentives to encourage greater saving for long-term care. Disability-linked annuity, that's a product that Ben knows very well. We've got several papers out on the product. It's effectively like a normal lifetime annuity, except for you receive a lower income at outset in return for the potential to receive a higher income if you need long-term care. So you might start off with 10% lower income than you would if you went through with a traditional annuity. An annuity pays a fixed income for life. But with a disability-linked annuity, if you qualified for long-term care, say you failed two ADLs, it might start paying £15,000 per annum. And if you fail three or more ADLs, then it might pay £25,000 per annum. So you can come up with an annuity product that provides income protection for the whole of your life and tries to match your needs for long-term care. One of the problems we have with annuities in the UK, what we've seen in the UK, is that people generally go for the one that offers the highest level of income now. So we have inflation-linked annuities in the UK, and probably only about 5% choose to go for the inflation-linked annuities, 95% choose the level. Even though inflation is a very real risk, there's a question of whether or not people are willing to take less income in return for higher income. Immediate and deferred needs annuities, that's the main product that's sold in the UK right now to meet long-term care. The company I work for sells these products. I have the pleasure of trying to price them. You see that that's still an option for a lot of people that have saved up money or have a pension pot at the point of needing long-term care, or they own a property, they might decide to sell the property and use the money to pay for one of these plans. It's roughly around perhaps a £200 million mark right now. Variable annuities are like income drawdown, except that there's an underlying guarantee. So you end up paying an extra charge, a guarantee charge, but in return there's an income for life guarantee. So it provides a similar sort of income guarantee to what you get for an annuity, but you get more flexibility. So to summarise in the table, each of the products have different points in time. It might start with an income protection is the one that's the earliest, you pre-funded, start saving either before retirement or at retirement. You can draw down where you probably choose at retirement whether or not to set money aside for long-term care. The ring fence pension pot, you can do it any time, put money aside, depending on how much you can afford. Disability linked annuity would be at retirement. The immediate and deferred needs annuity is clear, that's you buy that product when you need care or ongoing when you're going into care. And variable annuities are similar to drawdown. They all offer differences in terms of death benefits, but that's probably enough on that one. I'm going to skip over this slide. It's just there to really give you an idea that the different products have different target markets in terms of income and wealth. The protection insurance is one that would be at the lower wealth and income levels, whereas disability linked annuity, you can draw that variable annuity at the higher end. It's more of an illustration rather than an exact, but this blob should be there and this size. And on that note, I'll hand over to Ben.
Right, so I'm going to cover the second part of the talk, which is about what effect the care cap of £72,000 will have. Because there's so much publicity about £72,000, but as Tom says, there's an awful lot of extra costs that people don't actually perhaps realise. And so there's a probability one should probably work out, it's a probability somebody will actually survive to reach the cap. So I'm going to be looking at the probability of the individual survive to reach the cap, and looking at the cost we estimate before reaching the cap, and then the additional cost even after the cap has been reached. So we need a model for the probability, which includes the items you'd expect, age, gender, health status, to determine whether it's a residential home somebody's going into or a nursing home. The regional local authority set care costs are the costs Tom mentioned, really, the basic cap rate cost, the cost for metering purposes that the local authority sets. And then we include needs tests and survival rates. We decided to look at care costs using a 10-year horizon. The reason is that our estimates are that 99% of people will have died from being in a home after 10 years. So we look at really the whole population entering a home. We look at a 10-year horizon. And we're therefore looking, as I say, separately before the cap is reached, after the cap is reached, and allowing for inflation. So the figures we're going to give you are not in real terms, but they're actual monetary amounts. Allowing for the regional haircare for home costs, and also the metering that we mentioned. The care cost information has come from Langlois-Boussan, which is the usual place that one gets this information. So this has given us the average care home cost per region. We've also got the local authority sort of cap costs, if you like. We've inflated the cost to 2016 when the cap will come in, and the inflation rate we've used is 3.5%. And we're assuming that when people reach the cap, they will continue to pay top-up payments that Tom mentioned. If they're deciding to pay more than the basic level of care, we're going to assume that they're going to continue to pay the kind of level, enjoy the level of care that they were enjoying before they reached the cap. That's just for the purposes of our assumptions when we come up with the costs. The survival rates, well, there's very little data available on this kind of topic, but a very useful source has been the PSSR new work by Fordham and Fernandez on length of stay in nursing home using BUPA data. There's an average age of entry of age 85, and that gave us survival rates depending on gender, age, type of care home, and we're looking to improve these rates with a model that I've used many years ago, looking to try and improve these rates, these assumptions. So the way this works is that we have a spreadsheet which shows the gender, female, type of care, nursing in this case, age 85 at entry, the region. And the important thing is, in all the examples you give, we're assuming the person has assets of 150,000 from the sources of 12,000. And then we get some results out to do with probability of reaching the cap in the years before the cap is reached. I'm going to come on to that with this in a moment. So the probability of reaching the cap for England, according to our calculations, by age and gender, the one that are central is the age 85, which is extrapolated results for 75 and 95, show that males have only an 8% chance of reaching the cap, and females 15%. So the important thing is, it's a very, very high probability that an individual will actually never reach the cap. We then can present results showing for each region, going on the x-axis, each region to start with the amount of money spent for each before reaching the cap. So if we home in on the southeast, it's a level of about 130,000. That's before you reach the cap. Then after the cap has been reached, because there are these top-up payments to make, the whole cost has risen to something, in the case of the southeast, to something like £310,000. We can also, alongside that, look at the years it would take to reach the cap. So again, look at the southeast, we'd estimate 3.4 years to reach the cap. And the probability of reaching the cap, we can put it in red, and for the southeast, it's a 22% chance this person reaches the cap. So the important thing is that it takes a few years to reach the cap, so between about 4 and 5 years to reach the cap, and a low probability then that you actually will reach that cap. And these figures were all for nursing care. We can also look for figures, the similar figures, when it's residential care, where all the costs come down because it's residential care rather than nursing care. Similar kind of idea. We can also consider, rather than a 10-year horizon, we can think about the median. for example, the 50% survival in the in England, the 44,000 being the median figure of costs of care, and the expected cost being 65,500. So quite substantial costs coming through with all these figures. It's a whistle-stop tour, I know, the summary, well, as Tom said, the pensions provide a useful existing framework. The budget announcements where you no longer have to annuitise defined contribution pension funds, it has big implications for long-term care, so that still needs to be thought through. We've seen that there'll be a significant proportion of retirees needing long-term care or from other work, probabilities for males about 25% and females 35%. But what we've seen here is most people who need long-term care actually won't reach the cap. There's considerable variation by region, we saw from the shape of those graphs. And Tom has pointed out the range of products that could be used to support long-term care costs. Tax and regulatory changes we go into in more detail in the paper we've got. But I think the main thing is the £72,000 that people think about, in a sense, it shows how complicated this is, because the example we had, somebody could be paying £311,000. So it's clearly a clear need for careful communication from impartial advisors. The paper that we refer to, I know it's not an easy link to write down, but if anyone wants to email me or Tom, I'm very happy to send you a link, but there's also a link on the Institute of Actuaries website. Okay. I mean, it has to be said, we just split the graph, that we had to extrapolate to get 75 and 95, so we're basing everything on the age 85 group of work. But I mean, yes, I'm going to be able to have interesting results on that. Yeah. I'll have to talk about that.
And you can see it's part of the filing, when you're going to care, and the health rates are high, so there's a difference in the health rates.
We were allowed to make sure it was sensible. Don't know who to ask first.
Given the idea of this cost support, lack of success in people actually taking up anything other than their intervention, either through online options and kind of training. Given that there have been quite a lot of people who have been not required to have been employees already and their existing drawdown is quite a long time, why have products like this been there already? And even if they were, what is the possibility of people having to take money?
They shouldn't, that's the answer.
one question more, because we need to be had in time.
Okay, so do people have enough pension plans to be able to use pension options acceptable in the sense that, say, basically they're all required, mostly required, people to take a lower income and pay whatever they can. Certainly, I don't think most people can invest that much money.
No, you're right. I mean, I said it.
Thank you.